Welcome to the SCMS Classical Conversation Podcast, recorded live at Seattle Chamber Music Society's 2018 Summer Festival. I'm King FM's Dave Beck, and I hope you enjoy these in-depth conversations with festival musicians. By the way, you can find more podcast episodes and details at seattlechambermusic.org and at king.org. Make sure to rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts. And now, on with today's classical conversation. Speaking of, you know, sort of challenging colors and sounds and interesting effects and moods, you're performing two works by Eric Wolfgang Korngold this week in Seattle. I think James giving us a nod to the world of film music with a couple Korngold pieces and then the James Newton Howard premiere earlier this week. First of all, lots of notes to learn in the Korngold in both pieces. You've not done, I don't think many of your colleagues have done either of these pieces very often before.
No, in fact, I think most of us haven't played them at all. So this is a first for all of us. And yes, as you said, a lot of notes, a lot of musical instruction, a lot of, it's just a very thick score with what to do with every bar. There's a lot of push and pull, and we all need to feel it together. And there's a lot going on, but there's some really cool stuff in there. And so, you know, it's almost a shame. I was telling you earlier, it's almost a shame that we put all this work into it. I mean, we only had yesterday to rehearse it. So, I mean, when I say we put all this work into it, I mean an entire day. But it's almost too bad that we play it once and then we're done and we all disperse and we go our separate ways. Like, it would be nice to, you know, get some mileage out of it after all of this. Because it's just that type of piece that had just so much going on, and, you know, we all need to know what the other person has and where we fit in. And but it's, they're really, you know, typical Korngold Hollywood. There are some of those, you know, just beautiful moments of, you know, these melodies that he wrote that were just incredible.
There's this great story of Korngold was this little prodigy that grew up in Vienna, and Gustav Mahler would encounter him and sort of say, "Kid, you're going places."
Right.
And you were saying, like, looking at the Korngold scores, it kind of reminds you of Mahler in terms of the specificity of direction.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, the first thing I thought when I got the music was, wow, this looks like a Mahler, you know, like a first violin part or any part in to a Mahler symphony. Just a lot of direction and a lot of written, like, just words on what exactly to do. But yeah.
Well, I would get more of a sense here as we play this excerpt. It's a Korngold suite for piano, left hand, two violins, and cello. Tonight you're doing the quintet, but this will be the Friday piece. And just as a little bit background, it was written in 1923, and for the pianist Paul Wittgenstein, who commissioned several pieces. There's the Ravel concerto and Prokofiev, and he had lost his right arm during the First World War, so all sorts of music composed for him, which I did not know about this one. Well, let's listen to a little taste of it, then we'll talk some more about some of the specific challenges that you're looking at with this piece. So here's some Korngold. Sitting here playing air violin.
I'm thinking, is that the tempo? Or no.
Well, so that fanfare quality, very kind of cinematic, I think, in that section.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost a little, don't you get a little bit of E.T., that da, ya, da, 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 da,
exactly.
da, you know? I mean, it's that kind of, movie music.
Yeah, all those film composers stole from each other, right? the fugues and the sort of tremolo chromatic effects, and it's very...
Yeah,
busy, complex
it's busy.
Music.
Yeah, but it's—I don't know—it's so cool. I love it. I mean, I'm so, you know, in a way, like when James had first, you know, said, "Well, these are the pieces I'd like you to play that week," and I thought, "Oh, really, James? I'm so busy. I don't have you know." But now I'm so happy. I just, you know, I'm like, "Thank you, James." But it's really cool stuff. And I mean, you know, these types of pieces—they're. Everyone has something difficult to do. It's not just the first violin or just the piano or just the cello. I mean, everyone has a lot of major technical stuff to do in these pieces. So it's just, it's a big challenge for all of us. And then putting it together on top of that, you know, it's great stuff. I mean, I'm really looking forward to performing both of them and,
it was so thrilling. I think it was just last winter to hear the Korngold Sextet. And I know James at that point called an extra rehearsal or two. It was just a very daunting challenge. But the end result.
Right. I'm sure.
It's fantastic.
Yeah, and when you put a group of musicians together like that, it's going to be amazing. Yeah.
Absolutely. I want to conclude our conversation back where we started, going back to this beautiful violin you play that used to belong to Joseph Silverstein. And you... are the concertmaster. You sit right under the conductor's nose in the National Symphony in Washington, D.C. And I don't know if you even thought you were going for a career as a concertmaster at that point, but did you ever get to talk with him about being a concertmaster, or how did he shape you along those lines?
Well, I did later in life when I was asked to play some chamber music with him up in Maine, and I was already at the NSO. I was already concertmaster there. When this had happened. So, yeah, I mean, I did ask him a couple of questions here and there, but he mostly, he would mostly just say things like, trust your instinct and certain things about, well, how would you address your section about this or that? Or, you know, because sometimes it's you do feel like you should turn around and say something to your section, but you want it to be meaningful, but you know, and you don't want to waste the conductor's time or anyone else's time on stage. So there are a lot of things to kind of think about as you're sort of on the job and in the midst of making music. Like if something isn't quite jiving in my section or between my section and another section, it's so he was, you know, I just had, yeah, I mean, he mostly didn't talk about the concertmaster job. I mean, I maybe asked him a couple of questions here and there, but he just had a lot of other experiences that he would talk about, like when he was sitting concertmaster and working with other like certain conductors, and he had a lot of good stories about conductors. Mm-hmm. But
I think I recall from a conversation with him that he would say there were certain times the conductors were, you know, this is his opinion, were so bad that he in effect,
like
had to become the conductor.
Right. That does happen sometimes.
Yeah.
It's, you know, but it's mostly, I mean, I would say, yes, the concertmaster kind of tries to, you know, take over and like, well, maybe we should, but it's also just a sign of... maybe we should take this situation into our own hands, kind of,
exactly.
You know, with along with the other principals, like just kind of eye each other and because, you know, the sound is coming from us, not from the baton, so.
Right. Well, and you know, you have limited rehearsals, so
if
one time this person is beating it one way and they change their, that's when you're not going to get what you need necessarily from the podium.
So right, so it's like we just, you know, take our own initiative, but that there is some truth to that, absolutely.
Yeah. You've addressed it in some ways already, but why is being a concertmaster such a strong calling and such a good fit for you?
Oh, I don't know if it's a good fit. It just kind of happened.
It's worked for several years so far.
Well, I don't know. I haven't been fired yet, so. I was one of those kids in high school and college who always enjoyed not only playing chamber music. I always loved playing chamber music, hands down. That was my favorite thing. But I also really loved being in the orchestra, and I never missed an orchestra rehearsal, and I also had the opportunity to go to Tanglewood as a student, where you know the orchestra is so strong, and I felt like I had such great orchestral experiences there, and like Juilliard pre-college, and then the Curtis Orchestra, and somehow, I don't know, I would sit there, and even if I was in the back of the seconds, like my first year at Curtis. You know, I was a freshman, so I was in the back of the seconds, and we were playing Rite of Spring, and it was the first time I had ever played that piece, and I remember just being blown away by being in the middle of all of that sound, and how cool is it that 100 people on stage are just on the same page, you know? I mean, musically, and I don't know, so I felt like probably... you know, and when I was at Juilliard and my parents were sort of like, look, you need to, are you going to be a musician? Because you have to start making money because we can't give you our Visa card anymore. And and I took my first audition at St. Louis, which was for a title chair. It was assistant principal second violin. And when I got that job, I started to, you know, I was very happy. Wow, I got this job at such a young age, like, this is great. And I started to kind of eye the concertmaster, and then a year later won the Boston Symphony, you know, assistant concertmaster job, which I thought would be kind of the final. I mean, this is my hometown band, wow. So yeah. To speak, and I have, you know, this title chair, and it's great, and but I started to get the itch, and so when the National Symphony, when that position opened up, I thought, well, you know, I actually never thought I would win. I never thought I would win the job in a million years, but, you know, it's just the stars aligned, and that's where I ended up. And I feel, I enjoy it, because, like you said, I mean, it's I do have a chance to play some solos, and I feel, you know, I've always felt like I have something to say musically. You may not agree with it, but... And you get that opportunity as concertmaster to, you know, through your solos and just having these very close collaborations with different guest conductors that come in and, you know, working so closely with the other principals in the orchestra. It's just, I kind of feel like I have the best of all worlds, so to speak. So, yeah.
I remember when the story came on National Public Radio, you were the youngest concertmaster of an American orchestra when you got that position. That's an extraordinary story and accomplishment. Oh. And I'm so glad you come out and play chamber music in Seattle
wade
your way through Korn Gold parts. it's been a great pleasure to speak with you.
Thank you, likewise.
This is Nurit Bar-Josef. Let's give her a hand here. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Classical Conversations podcast. Special thanks to Steinway Gallery of Seattle for hosting today's conversation. This podcast is a co-production of Seattle Chamber Music Society and Classical King FM. Bill Levy is our recording engineer. Dacia Clay produces the program. The Seattle Chamber Music Society staff provides technical support and oversight for the podcast, along with Seth Tompkins. To learn more, go to seattlechambermusic.org or to king.org. Remember to rate and review us wherever you listen to your podcasts. I'm Dave Beck.